this guy in the purple. Is he with you?
Good morning. I am Al Wall, the Administrative Law Judge, pursuant to temporary appointment designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings upon the request of the Public Service Commission to serve as the hearing officer for this hearing. This is the hearing of the application of Wilton Wind 4, LLC, for a certificate of site compatibility to authorize construction of a 99-megawatt wind power project consisting of up to 62 wind turbine generators and associated facilities located in Burleigh County, North Dakota, which is identified and known as the Wilton 4 Wind Energy Center. This is North Dakota Public Service Commission case number PU-11-646. Before proceeding with the hearing, I will ask the commissioners for their comments and any directions for the hearing. Commission Chairman Tony Clark.
Well, good morning and welcome to everyone. Thank you for being here. We keep hearing about the production tax credit speeding up or creating an impetus for utility companies and developers to finish these wind farms before the end of next year. I would just note that this will be, if you take these last tomorrow and then the last few days, we'll have done three wind farm sightings in four business days. We have one tomorrow, one today, and we had one last week in Velva, and I think it probably speaks to that sort of urgency that's being seen in the field with regard to wind farm development. So we've cited a number of these in the past. I'm sure we will do more in the future. And I just want to thank everyone for being here. Look forward to a good record being developed.
Commissioner Kevin Kramer.
Well, just good morning. Welcome, everybody. I guess one of the things that encourages me the most about this one is that we're looking at a bunch of veterans. So we know what to expect, and you know what to expect, and so I would expect a very good and thorough hearing and look forward to getting right after it.
Commissioner Koch.
Well, good morning and welcome. I share my colleague comments as well. It's good to see everyone back today and ready to go for the hearing. But also, it's kind of interesting about this hearing. Most of the wind hearings we do, if you will, are out of the capital. We're in a county somewhere else, and this is, of course, in Burleigh County, so we're able to have it right here in our office building. But we are here for the public, and so anyone out there in the audience who wishes to participate in the hearing, this is your chance to say what you have to say in front of the commission, and this is your chance to let us know because the record is developed in this hearing. So thank you all for coming. I look forward to any participation.
Thank you, commissioners. The record will show that it is a little past 10 o'clock a.m., December 19, 2011, at the North Dakota Public Service Commission Hearing Room, 12-4 of the Capitol Building in Bismarck. The time, date, and place set by the Notice of Filing and Notice of Hearing issued by the North Dakota Public Service Commission, November 23, 2011, in case number PU-11-646, for a hearing of the application of Wilton Wind 4 for a certificate of site compatibility to authorize construction of a wind power project located in Burleigh County, North Dakota, which is identified and known as the Wilton 4 Wind Energy Center. All as I have previously recited and as is set forth in the notice of filing and notice of hearing and shown by the map which is part of the notice and which has all been duly noticed and published in accordance with the requirements of statute and the Commission's rules. The Commission's notice of filing and notice of hearing for this hearing specified the following issues to be considered and determined upon this hearing. First, will the location, construction, and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Next, are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources? And last, will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continued system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? Mr. Biella, please state your appearance for the record.
Yes, Your Honor. Brian Biella with the law firm of Crowley Fleck representing the applicant, Wilton Wind 4, LLC.
Mr. Grumman, please state your appearance for the record and the appearance of any member of the Commission staff who will participate in the hearing.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mark Grumman, appearing on behalf of Commission staff. With me here is Jerry Lean, also on behalf of Commission staff.
I don't see anyone present who may wish to address the Commission, that is, other than witnesses for Wilton Wind 4. Who may wish to address the Commission regarding this hearing, but I just mentioned for those who may be listening to the internet stream that if you have an interest in this hearing and if you have the opportunity and decide that you would address the Commission, that you should do so, that you're welcome, more than welcome. I can assure you the Commission is interested in what you may have to say concerning this project, and you should certainly come to the hearing room and to the Commission's hearing room in the Capitol this morning, and at the conclusion of the presentation of Wilton Wind, you can certainly have an opportunity, certainly will have an opportunity to address the Commission. And I am certainly willing to assist you to do that to the extent that I can. Mr. Biella, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Our first witness is Scott Scoville.
Mr. Scoville, I know that you have done this many times previously, but as you know, we need to do the drill, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury, and your testimony is required by law to be under oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. Being advised regarding, please raise your right hand. Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Scoville, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Biella.
Thank you, Your Honor. Scott, would you please state your name and business address?
My name is Scott Scoville. I am the Director of Wind Development for NextEra Energy Resources, LLC, formerly known as FPL Energy, LLC. My business address is 700 Universe Boulevard, Juno Beach, Florida.
And Scott, is Wilton Wind 4, LLC, a wholly owned subsidiary of NextEra Energy Resources, LLC?
Yes.
And what is your position with Wilton Wind 4?
I am the project manager for the Wilton Wind 4 Energy Center.
And showing you what has been marked as Wilton Wind 4 Exhibit 1, would you please identify it?
This is the application of the Wilton Wind 4 LLC to the North Dakota Public Service Commission for a certificate of site compatibility for the Wilton Wind 4 Energy Center located in Burley County, North Dakota.
And please just briefly describe the Wilton Wind 4 Energy Center.
The project will have a nameplate capacity of approximately 99 megawatts, consisting of 32 GE 1.6 megawatt XLE wind turbine generators. Additional facilities will include access roads, electrical collection systems and cabling, a substation, and a construction laydown area. The project area is located approximately 7 miles southwest of Wilton, North Dakota, and is located in Croft, Jalin, and Eklund townships. The project area encompasses 15,752 acres, or 26.4 square miles. The turbines will be placed throughout the project area. However, the structures will occupy approximately 116 acres during operations, or less than 1% of the total land area. A portion of the project area in Croft Township was previously submitted to this commission as part of the Baldwin Wind Energy Center in case number PU-09-668. The Baldwin Wind application included 37 alternate turbines in Croft Township. These turbines were not constructed as part of the Baldwin Wind project and are currently proposed to be constructed as part of this project. The project layout includes 35 turbines and one alternate location, and one alternate turbine located in Croft Township. Of these, 29 turbine locations coincide with the turbine locations previously evaluated as Baldwin Wind alternates. The remaining six turbines and proposed alternate have been relocated to further the distance from a few non-participating landowners in Croft Township. Assuming a net capacity factor of 48%, the average projected annual average output is estimated to be greater than 416,000 megawatt hours per year. As with all wind projects, the output is dependent upon wind resource, final design, site-specific features, and equipment. The Wilton Wind 4 project is an optimal site due to favorable environmental, wind resource, and transmission and economic factors.
And Scott, I think you might have misspoken. I think you said 32 turbines. I believe the correct number is 62. Is that
the project consists of 62 General Electric 1.6 XLE wind turbines.
And also, I believe you said it was located 7 miles southwest of Wilton. I believe it's 7 miles southeast. Would that be correct?
Southeast.
Thank you. And Scott, why is wind power needed?
In March 2007, North Dakota enacted legislation adopting a voluntary renewable portfolio objective that aims to have 10% electricity generated from renewable resources by 2015. North Dakota leads the nation in potential wind power capacity. According to a March 2009 report prepared by the Empower North ND Commission, one of the state's energy goals is to install wind energy capacity of 5,000 megawatts by 2025. There is a future need for additional energy production in the Mid-Continent Area Power Pool region. In the July 1, 2003 MAP load compatibility report stated that under the minimum reserve requirements, deficits were expected as soon as 2006. MAP members were urged to build additional capacity in order to maintain reserve levels higher than the MAP minimum. The most recent MAP report available 2009 indicates that deficits are now expected by 2017.
And does NextEra Energy operate other renewable energy projects in the United States?
Yes, NextEra Energy have developed environmentally responsible electric generation projects throughout the United States, and collectively own and operate over 8,200 megawatts of renewable generation capacity with 85 wind projects in 17 states and 3 provinces in Canada. In North Dakota, this includes our Edgley Column, Wilton 1 and 2, Baldwin Wind, Oliver 1 and 2, Langdon 1 and 2, and the Ashtabula 1, 2, and 3 wind projects.
And why was this site chosen for a wind energy facility?
Wilton Wind 4 utilizes energy data from meteorological towers on the project site. In addition, Wilton Wind 4 has secured information from other sources to aid in correlating the wind data on site. As a renewable resource, wind is classified according to wind power classes, which are typically based on wind speeds. These classes range from class 1 to class 7. In general, at 50 meters, wind power of a class 4 or higher can be useful for generating wind power with large turbines. In North Dakota has wind resources consistent with utility scale production. Good to excellent wind resource areas are located throughout North Dakota. Winds within the project vicinity generally consist of class 3 to class 4 winds. Areas with annual average wind speeds around 6.5 meters per second and greater at 80 meter hub heights are generally considered to have suitable wind resources for wind development. The wind resources in the project vicinity have a predicted mean annual wind speed of 8 meters per second or greater.
And would you please briefly describe the wind power technology proposed to be used at the Wilton Wind 4 Energy Center?
The project consists of up to 62 GE 1.6 megawatt XLE wind turbines. The turbines begin operation at wind speeds of 7.8 miles per hour and reach its rated capacity at a wind speed of 25.7 miles per hour. The turbines are designed to operate at wind speeds of up to 56 miles per hour. The towers are conical tubular steel with a hub height of 262 feet. The rotors consist of 3 blades with a 271-foot rotor diameter and a rotor speed of 16.8 revolutions per minute. At the base of each turbine is a trans At the base of each turbine, a transformer will be installed to raise the power collection voltage to 34.5 kilovolts. The power from these transformers will run through an underground collection system consisting of various buried cables. All the collection system cables will terminate in an on-site collector substation, which raises the power line voltage to 230 kilovolts. The substation will be located within the existing Baldwin Wind Energy Center's substation area. The substation will be connected to the Central Power Electric Cooperative's existing transmission line via approximately 240 feet of 230 kV overhead tie line. The power will then travel approximately 4.2 miles along the Central Power Electric Cooperative's line to Western Area Power Administration's Hilkins Switching Substation.
And what setbacks have been established for this wind energy center?
The setback utilized in the design of the Wilton Wind 4 project are detailed in Table 10 on page 4.2 of the application. For both Croft and Jalin townships, all turbine setbacks are greater than 1,400 feet from occupied residences and at least 440 or 1.1 turbine height from all property lines, public roadways, and overhead transmission lines. Additionally, all turbines in Croft Township are set back a minimum of 1,750 feet from non-participating residences.
And please describe the other features of the Wilton Wind 4 Energy Center.
The turbines have a SCADA-controlled communication system that permits automatic independent operation and remote supervision, thus allowing simultaneous control of many turbines. In addition, all utility protection and metering equipment will meet the National Electric Safety Code standards for parallel operations.
And please briefly describe the construction process.
Some of the steps in the construction process are we have to complete surveys to microsite the location of structures and roadways. We will do soil boring, test analysis for proper foundation design and materials. There's the construction of access road and the construction of all underground feeder lines. There's the design and the construction of the project substation, the installation of the tower foundations and underground and any above ground cables, the tower placement and wind turbine settings, the installation of site fencing and security, and ultimately the restoration, revegetation of disturbed land when construction activities are completed.
And what is the status of acquisition of easements and other property rights needed for construction of the wind energy center?
Except for a collection agreement with the North Dakota State Land Department, Wilton Wind has obtained 100% of the easements necessary for the proposed project.
And just please briefly describe the commissioning process.
The project will undergo detailed inspection and testing procedures prior to final turbine commission. Commission inspection and testing will occur for each component on the wind turbines, as well as the communication system, meteorological system, obstruction lighting, high voltage collector and feeder system, and communication systems.
And please briefly describe the maintenance schedule for the wind farm.
Wilton Wind 4 will monitor the project on a daily basis. This will be accompanied by a visual inspection for on-site operating staff. Several daily checks will be made in the first 2 months of commercial operations to verify the project is operating within the expected parameters. Project service and maintenance is scheduled at regular intervals thereafter.
And who will purchase the power from the Wilton Wind 4 Energy Center?
Wilton Wind 4 does not have a customer at this time.
And what is the anticipated cost of the Wilton Wind 4 Energy Center?
Approximately $165 million.
And is it important that this wind farm be constructed in 2012?
It is important to finalize all the permitting for Wilton 4. We are currently going through the NEPA EIS review process and expect Western Area Power Administration to issue its record of decision in July 2012. With access to transmission, a very favorable and understood wind resource, we believe this project is very marketable. We have no clarity, but are optimistic on an extension of the federal production tax credit. If Congress were to extend the PTC in 2012 and we were to secure a customer, we want to be in a position to potentially build Wilton 4 in late 2012 and early 2013.
And would you please briefly describe the decommissioning process?
Wilton Wind 4 has a contractual obligation to remove the wind facilities, including foundations, to a depth of 3 feet when the easements expire. Wilton Wind 4 does reserve the right to explore alternatives regarding project decommissioning at the end of the project certificate term. Retrofitting the turbines and power systems with upgrades based on new technology may allow the wind farm to produce efficiently for several more years. When decommissioning occurs, Wilton Wind 4 will remove all physical materials pertaining to the wind farm improvements from the easement area and restore the area to substantially the same physical condition that existed immediately before construction of the improvements. Wilton Wind 4 is committed to decommissioning to the decommissioning conditions which are contained in the landowner easements, Burley County or Jalin Township's conditional use permits, and the North Dakota Public Service Commission's regulations.
Let me show you what has been marked. This is Wilton Wind 4 exhibit number 2. And is this the certification relating to order provisions, energy conversion facility siting as requested to that the PSC be executed by Wilton Wind 4?
Yes.
And has it been executed by an officer with Wilton Wind 4 LLC?
Yes.
And is it the request of Wilton Wind 4 that the proposed Wilton Wind 4 Energy Center be approved by the Public Service Commission and that the commission issue a certificate of site compatibility for the project?
Yes.
And is it the further request of Wilton Wind 4 that the commission issue the certificate of site compatibility in an expedited manner so that construction may commence as soon as possible?
Yes.
Your Honor, I have no further questions of this witness. We would offer Exhibits 1 and 2 into the record.
Mr. Grumman, Exhibit 1.
No objection, Your Honor.
And Exhibit 2.
No objection.
Exhibits 1 and 2 are each received. Mr. Grumman.
Your Honor, maybe I should take this opportunity to motion periodically. Mr. Lean may be inquiring of the witnesses, so I would motion that he be allowed to do so.
Motion granted.
That being said, I have no questions, Mr. Lean.
Mr. Lean.
Yeah, Scott, what was the burial depth of the collection cables?
48 inches.
And I see there is a map over here showing locations of residences. Is that going to, do you have another witness that's going to talk about that?
Other witness may be able to answer some of the questions, but yes, we're.
My question was, what was the closest residence?
The closest resident in Jalin Township is 1,482 feet.
Is that a participating landowner?
Yes.
What's the closest non-participating landowner residence?
I don't know the non-participating landowner in Jalin Township, but it's...
Okay. I wonder if maybe we could find that out.
Okay.
Is that a request for a late filed exhibit, Mr. Leon?
I don't know if it needs to be...
I'll look.
I could, maybe their next witness can address it or something.
Very good.
Then I had another question that just kind of came into my mind here as was listening and looking at these setbacks. Is, wasn't Crofts Township under the Burley County Commission's jurisdiction for zoning for these?
Yes, yes.
So is this... What Burley County ended up adopting, the 1,400 feet, or?
It's on page 4.2, Scott.
Yeah. Sorry, what was your question, Jerry?
Now Crofts Township is under Burley County for zoning, and so the Burley County ordinances that they adopted last year would apply to that, and the same with, or does Gillen Township have their own too? I guess that's two questions.
Each township had their own guidance or guidelines for setbacks. The setbacks listed here for Crofts Township are per the recently passed Burley County wind siting guidelines, and then Jalin Township they had their own, which were 1,400 feet from turbines, which have been what we've used in the past, 1.1 from public roads.
Okay.
The only difference between the two main differences for setbacks were the 1,750 from non-participating residences in Croft Township.
Okay. And we're checking to see what the closest one of those is yet. And I think that's all the questions I had. Thanks.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
Just a couple. Acoustic and flicker issues will be dealt with in the next witness?
Yes.
Okay. And the road setback that you had just mentioned, again, remind me, is it 1.1 from the right-of-way, edge of the right-of-way, or 1.1 from the center line of the road?
I can't answer that right now.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Further questions from the commission? Commissioner Cock.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Scott, for your testimony. Just some general background questions. When a company goes forward, how do you determine where to begin? I mean, 99 megawatts, what's the process that says 99? Why not 80? Why not 120? How do you even begin that process?
A lot of it has to there's probably two factors driving the size. One is your interconnection, the available electricity on the interconnection system.
Okay.
And the size of your interconnection request, and what upgrades would be required with the various as you size your project, what potential downstream network upgrades may be required. So if you got too big, you may incur a lot of additional costs. So it's a optimal size, and typically customers like 50 and 100-megawatt blocks.
Fair enough. You'd also testified 48% capacity factor. I'd never heard a number that high before. I mean, is that the highest that you have in your system right now?
It's one of the highest. We are seeing – one of the things we're seeing right now with the net capacity factors is some of the technology coming out in the power curves and the blades. The blades are now driving the industry as we are – the technology is increasing in how they manufacture the blades, allowing them to take greater and greater wind speeds. So it's always a testing ground if our sites come back suitable from North Dakota projects. That's usually and they have been approved by the manufacturer. So we're seeing the increased net capacity factors from the blade lengths.
Okay, perfect. And then you kind of led me to the next question. Is we've had some things happen in the state where Rugby had a turbine failure where basically the rotor head fell off. There was a blade failure in wind farm south of Minot. What assurances can you give me that your equipment is tested, can handle the elements, we put together properly so these kind of things don't happen? And if they do happen, what's the company's commitment to notify us in what time frame that something like this has happened?
Well, I think our commitment to the commission is in a catastrophic. We notify the commission of any catastrophic event, with the turbines, which we will, we will notify the commission for that. Assurances: these are proven technologies. These are utility scale turbines. We have, we as a company have 9,000 turbines in our fleet. It's unfortunate, but there are failures with mechanical devices. I think the assurances that we give the public is proper is our setbacks from the turbines. There's another reason besides sound and flicker. It's also for safety. And at 500 feet, is usually considered a safe distance to maintain from these turbines.
Okay. In the certificate, it talks by notifying the commission within 5 business days if there's any, bats or things like that were injured. But so what's the time frame, though, for the catastrophic failure? Notifying, but what's the time frame? Will it be 1 day, 3 days, 5 days? Because that's, for me, the earlier we find out, the better.
We could work our notification periods, but normally we'd need a day or two we have to do an internal evaluation, an internal analysis of what happened, but we can notify the commission that there's been a failure within a day or two.
Okay, thank you very much. That was all that I had.
Brother Commissioner Kramer.
Just a little bit more on the blade failure issue, because as I recall, Scott, the failure of the blade up near Minot, and then about the same time you all had one at Wilton, as I recall, similar. Was it the same blade manufacturer, as I recall? It was sort of the banana peel effect of the skin peeling off of the blade, was that accurate? Am I recalling
that? It was. I'm not sure of who of the manufacturers, but it was the blade delaminated on the turbines.
Is that a better way of saying it than peeled like a banana?
I like your description better. I usually speak in your language. I speak that language, banana peeling. But
that particular blade, that was a failure of that particular blade, as I recall, in other places, not just here. Has that been resolved by the manufacturer, do you know?
I believe it was just a failure. I don't believe we have a systemic, a serial problem with the blades, but it was
okay.
One of those things that happens.
My other question, I think it would be more appropriate for the next witness, so I have nothing further. Thanks.
Thank you.
Further questions from the commission? Follow-up, Mr. Biella?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Lean?
None.
Thank you very much, Mr. Scoville.
Your Honor, we would call Tracy Dubuque to the stand, please.
They're getting bigger.
I have no idea why I have trouble with your last name, but
well, because I changed it. It'd be Dubuque, like Dubuque, Iowa.
Dubuque.
Yeah.
Would you spell it for me, please?
Dubuque.
Mr. Buick, as you know, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. Will you raise your right hand, please? Being advised regarding perjury, Ms. Dubuque, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Biella.
Thank you, Your Honor. Tracy, please state your full name and business address.
I'm Tracy Dubuque, and I'm employed by Tetra Tech and located in 160 Federal Street in Boston, Massachusetts.
And what is your position with Tetra Tech?
I'm a senior project manager over at Tetra Tech, and I've been working in environmental consulting for 10 years, and I've been preparing and securing environmental permits for energy-related facilities, coordinating and managing biological and cultural field surveys, and also contributing to the National Environmental Policy Act documentation. I also manage siting studies, prepare environmental permits, and consult with local, state, and federal stakeholders in development of wind energy projects.
And were you involved in the preparation of the environmental and cultural resource reports to the Public Service Commission as set forth in the application being Wilton Wind 4's Exhibit Number 1?
Yes.
And is the purpose of your testimony today to describe the environmental and cultural resource matters pertaining to the Wilton Wind 4 Energy Center?
Yes.
Now, turning to the application regarding the Public Service Commission's exclusion areas, would you please describe any exclusion areas that are found within the area of the Wind Energy Center?
Sure. There are four exclusion area types that are located within the project area. Native prairie grasslands are present within the project area and represent approximately 10% of the project area. As a result, it's not considered unique grasslands or for exclusion. They're more considered avoidance areas. Also, there's a section of state land that's located in Eklund Township. There are no turbines located on this property, but there will be collection running along the southern boundary of this parcel. In addition, archaeological sites have been identified through field survey, and they will be avoided to the extent possible. Another one is prime farmland, which has been avoided to the extent practicable. And permanent impacts are expected to be up to 13 acres, which is a negligible percentage of the project area. For areas critical to threatened or endangered animal or plant species, as you know, the project area is located within the Whooping Crane Migration Corridor, but there is little suitable wetland habitat compared to the surrounding areas and the project area. No wetlands will be permanently affected by the project, and there are also no recorded whooping crane observations in the project area to date.
And next, turning, would you please briefly describe any Public Service Commission avoidance areas that are contained within the Wind Energy Center?
Sure. There are three avoidance area types. We did do a Class 3 cultural resource survey for this project, and I will be going into that in more detail later on in my testimony. There is also abandoned coal mines and mined areas that are present adjacent to the project area, and associated sinkholes are found within the project area. Subsidence hazards will be mitigated through field studies and geotechnical analyses. Also, there are wetlands within the project area, but permanent impacts will be avoided, and woodland impacts are not anticipated.
Okay, next, regarding the Public Service Commission's selection criteria, would you please identify any potential impacts?
Sure. There are 13. Agricultural production, there are approximately 116 acres of land that will be affected by the 62 turbines, associated access roads, and the substation. Temporary impacts would be approximately 284 acres. For family farms and ranches, as Scott mentioned, the project will comply with local setbacks. In Jalin Townships, the turbines will be set back 1,400 feet from occupied residences. And in Croft Township, the turbines will be set back 1,400 feet from occupied residences on participating properties and 1,750 feet from occupied residences on non-participating properties. Wind lease payments to farmers will provide a supplemental source of income on the participating properties. For the irrigation, there's no irrigation currently occurring within the project area. For agricultural quality, no impacts to the agricultural quality of the cropland are anticipated. If compaction of soils does occur during construction, Wilton 4 will work with the landowners to alleviate the compaction. During construction, there will be an increase in vehicle trips per day anticipated. During facility operation, no significant impacts are anticipated. For retail services, no adverse impacts are anticipated. Rather, local services such as motels, restaurants, and convenience stores are likely to experience an increase in business during project construction. For utility services, Wilton 4 will use station service from Central Electric, which will suggest appropriate configurations to the electrical system. For noise-sensitive land uses, the noise-sensitive land uses within the project area are residences near turbines. And we'll be complying with local setbacks, as I mentioned earlier. For animal health and safety, no impacts to livestock are anticipated from construction or operation of the facility. And I will actually be discussing more on avian use and mitigation later in my testimony. For plant life, the project will result in approximately 116 acres of permanent impact. And the land where the turbines will be sited is primarily undeveloped prairie. And for the cumulative effect, wind energy development is anticipated to have a positive cumulative impact on air quality and minimal impacts to geology, soils, water, noise, safety and health issues, and cultural resources. Socioeconomic impacts are anticipated to be positive as the rural economy and energy production is diversified. Wind energy development removes less total land from agricultural use than other forms of development. And finally, there are no adverse impacts to surface water drainage, groundwater flow, law enforcement, school systems, government services, general and mental health care facilities, recreational programs, retail or utility services, local institutions, aquifers, temporary and permanent housing, and temporary and permanent skilled and unskilled labor.
Okay. Next, Tracy, could you just briefly summarize how the project may affect the policy criteria of the commission?
Sure. Wilton 4 is developing the site to maximize energy output and has developed a site layout that optimizes wind resources while minimizing the impacts on land resources and any potentially sensitive areas. Wilton 4 will also use local labor to the extent possible. And the energy generated at the site will utilize the wind resources of the state of North Dakota. No residences will be relocated as a result of the project. And the project will not interfere with adjacent land uses. Wilton 4 will continue to work with landowners of the properties for the project. The energy transmitter will be injected into Western's 230 kV line at the Hilkin substation via the Baldwin substation and will be produced entirely for use in the state of North Dakota. Existing facilities and facility corridors were considered in the location of the wind farm and associated facilities. And finally, Wilton 4 and the EPC contractor will employ best management practices during construction to monitor soil impacts and segregate topsoil. Stormwater prevention plans will be prepared for the for all disturbance sites exceeding the size threshold. Environmental monitors will be on site during construction to ensure there will be no impacts to wetlands and documented archaeological sites that require avoidance.
And Tracy, what other permits are needed for this project and what is the status of those permits?
Western Area Power Administration, we're going through a federal permitting process, and it's a National Environmental Policy Act. The type of approval that will be obtained for that is a record of decision. The public scoping meeting was held in July of 2011. The draft environmental impact statement is currently underway. Western is currently working on that right now and should be hoping to get the record of decision July of 2012. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been consulted as part of the NEPA federal process under Section 7. Endangered Species Act. So they'll be involved in the process, and Western has been in contact with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Biological assessment is also underway. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the nationwide permit. We did do a wetland delineation, and we will be avoiding all permanent impacts, so that permit is not required. Federal Aviation Administration, notice and approval is required for all structures over 200 feet. The FAA forms have all been submitted, haven't been received yet. Public Service Commission, a certificate of site compatibility for any facility over a half a megawatt. That's why we're here today. The North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office, again, through the NEPA process, Western will be contacting them under the Section 106 consultation under the National Historic Preservation Act. As part of that process, we have conducted a Class 1 and Class 3 survey. The report will be submitted to the SHPO. And also, a Class 2 architectural survey will be completed in the spring. There are also 8 permits that will be applied for once the certificate is received. That's the North Dakota Department of Health NPDES permit, the North Dakota Highway Patrol Overheight Overweight permit, the North Dakota Department of Transportation Road Approach Access Permit, the North Dakota Department of Transportation Utility Permit Risk Management Document, the Croft Township Building Permit, and the Jalin Township Building Permit, and 2 permits in Eklund Township, the Building Permit, and also a Conditional Use Permit for collection and potentially substation revisions. In addition, there is a Croft Township conditional use permit, and that permit was actually obtained September 30th, 2011. And the Jalin Township conditional use permit was issued October 11th, 2011.
Okay, and Tracy, what is the status of surveys of cultural and archaeological resources and contacts with the North Dakota SHPO?
The Class 3 cultural resources inventory for the portion of the project in Croft Township was completed as part of the Baldwin Wind Energy Center in 2009 and 2010. Those survey results were submitted to SHPO, and SHPO made a recommendation of no historic properties affected, provided that documented Native American stone features sites were avoided. Class 2 architectural reconnaissance survey was also conducted for the portion of Croft Township as part of the Baldwin Wind Energy Center in 2010. Tetra Tech recommended that none of the 77 properties documented during the survey were potentially eligible to the National Register of Historic Places, and found a finding of no historic properties affected was proposed. Tetra Tech also conducted a Class 1 and a Class 3 survey for the portion of the project in Jalin Township in the fall of 2011. The Class 1 literature review included identifying archaeological sites and surveys within 1 mile of the project layout, and structures, bridges, and cemeteries within 1.5 miles of the turbine layout. During all of the pedestrian surveys, Tetra Tech identified 13 sites within the survey area that have been recommended for avoidance. These sites include rock cairns, stone alignments, stone piles, a dump, and a quarry. As long as these sites and their associated avoidance buffers can be avoided during construction, then Tetra Tech recommends a determination of no historic properties affected. The North Dakota SHPO provided comments on the project in response to Western's request for comments during the NEPA public scoping period, and in response to the query letter sent by Tetra Tech to support the PSC process. Western is currently reviewing the cultural resources report, and as I mentioned, the report will be provided to the SHPO upon finalization and to support both the PSC process and Western Section 106 consultation with the SHPO.
Okay, and next, Tracy, with respect to wetlands, are any impacted by this project?
A wetland evaluation was completed for the project. The wetland report was submitted to the PSC as an addendum to the application on December 9th, so I assume everybody has that. 9 potentially jurisdictional features were identified within the temporary disturbance buffers of collection lines and service roads, but no features were identified within the permanent disturbance buffer. With this, the project is below the half-an-acre threshold for permanent wetland impacts, making it eligible under the Army Corps of Engineers Nationwide Permit 12. Given the assumptions above, the project is also below the tenth of an acre notification and mitigation thresholds for Nationwide Permit 12. Application for a Section 404 permit, as well as notification to the Army Corps of Engineers, is unnecessary.
And has Wilton Wind 4 completed an avian survey?
Yes. Avian use surveys have been completed for the project in 2008, 2009, 2010, and again in the fall of 2011. In addition, other assessments were also conducted, including a whooping crane likelihood assessment. 2 bird species of primary interest to wind energy development in the central and north central United States are whooping cranes and sharp-tailed grouse. No whooping cranes or sharp-tailed grouse leks were observed during the surveys, although individual grouse were observed.
And what mitigation is planned for avian impacts?
Because the project will interconnect into Western's power grid, Western is preparing an environmental impact statement in accordance with the National Environmental Policy Act. As I mentioned, a public scoping meeting was held in July of 2011 to inform the public about the project and solicit comments. Western will consult with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regarding impacts to wildlife species, particularly avian species listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act. A biological assessment will be conducted along with an avian and bat protection plan, as well as an adaptive management plan. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife has drafted land-based guidelines that are now referenced more than the potential impact index, and this was part of U.S. Fish and Wildlife's response to Western. The P2 index is it's basically a first-cut analysis of the suitability of a site proposed for wind development. The emphasis is on initial site selection. So the land-based guidelines is also a tiered approach. It uses an iterative approach in a decision-making process for collecting information. Wilton 4 has basically covered tiers 1 through 3, as I mentioned above, and we'll go into further detail in a little bit about the tiers 4 and 5, which are the which are additional measures that Wilton 4 will be taking. As part of the avian and bat protection plan, Wilton 4 has committed to implementing additional measures, including the following, for avoiding and minimizing the effects of the project on potentially occurring federally threatened and endangered species. And they're as follows. All new collector lines will be buried, and construction of transmission lines is limited to a 240-foot long overhead 230 kV tie line. As a result, the project construction would limit additional risk of avian collision or electrocution with overhead transmission lines. The short section of overhead transmission line will be marked according to the Avian Power Line Interaction Committee, which is APLIC, guidelines to reduce risk of collision. Construction activities will be modified or curtailed during construction activities within 2 miles of whooping cranes observed on site during the construction phase of the project, leaving the birds undisturbed until they were no longer within the wind farm boundaries. A post-construction monitoring program will be implemented during spring and fall whooping crane migration seasons for 3 years post-construction to detect the presence of whooping cranes within the project area. If a whooping crane is observed, Wilton 4 will shut down specific turbines located within 1 mile of the birds until such time that the birds are no longer observed in the area. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife will also be notified if whooping cranes are observed in the area. Wilton 4 will also conduct post-construction mortality monitoring surveys for birds and bats following 1 year post-construction of the project. Wilton 4 also has developed a wildlife responsive reporting system, and that includes protocols for field technicians to report and document avian mortalities during routine maintenance operations for the life of the project. Wilton 4 has also developed an adaptive management plan so that information gathered and experience gained from the post-construction monitoring informs knowledge of the impacts of the wind farm and is incorporated into an adaptive management of the site. So that utilizes the Department of Interior's technical guide on adaptive management. Wilton 4 has also designed the layout of the project so that no permanent impacts to wetlands occur. And finally, Wilton 4 is proposing in its lighting plan to use the minimum number of aviation hazard lights acceptable to the Federal Aviation Administration. And they also agreed to install motion-activated lighting or downshielding lighting on other project facilities that require lighting.
And Tracy, has Wilton 4 completed a sound study?
Yes, an acoustic assessment is included in Appendix C of the application.
And would you please describe the results of the acoustic assessment?
Yeah, the acoustic modeling analysis, which is inclusive of a number of conservative assumptions, demonstrates that the project is adequately designed to meet EPA guidelines at all noise-sensitive occupied residences. Sound from the project area, when audible, will likely not be deemed excessive or unusually loud at the setback distances and will be consistent with sound generated at similar wind energy projects successfully sited throughout the state of North Dakota, which employ similar criteria and turbine setback distances. The Wilton 4 Wind Energy Center is expected to generate sound levels that will be below the EPA guideline limits at occupied residences and is therefore not expected to present an adverse noise impact with respect to public welfare, health, and safety.
And Tracy, has Tetra Tech completed a shadow effect study?
Yes, also included in Appendix C to the application is the shadow flicker impact analysis for the Wilton 4 Wind Energy Center.
And what are the results of the shadow flicker impact analysis?
The analysis of potential shadow flicker impacts from the project to nearby occupied houses shows the shadow flicker impacts within the area of the study are expected to be minor and below the 30 hours per year, which has been a precedent established in the industry. The analysis assumes that residences will have a direct inline view of the incoming shadow flicker sunlight and does not account for trees or other obstructions which may block sunlight. For these reasons, shadow flicker impacts are expected to be less than estimated with the conservative analysis, and shadow flicker is not expected to be a significant environmental impact.
And did Tetra Tech consider cumulative effects given the relatively close proximity to other wind energy projects in the area?
Yes. A cumulative impact assessment was conducted for both noise and shadow flicker based on a total of 194 turbines on residences within approximately 1 mile from these projects. A cumulative noise analysis found that the 48.6 dBA threshold was exceeded under anomalous meteorological conditions at 9 receptors. 2 of these receptors, which are not occupied residences, are the same receptors where noise threshold is exceeded by modeling the project turbines only. The remaining 7 receptors were either unoccupied structures or participating residences. A cumulative shadow flicker analysis resulted in 4 receptors greater than 30 hours per year, in addition to the 2 receptors that exceed this threshold when modeling the project turbines only. But these are either unoccupied structures or participating residences. Given the distances from the receptors where the noise and shadow flicker limits are exceeded to the project turbines, the exceedances appear to result from proximity to other project turbines rather than the cumulative effect from the Wilton 4 turbines. So with regard to cumulative effect to wildlife, there is the potential for avian and bat collisions, but they are anticipated to be relatively few. As mentioned above, Wilton 4 is committed to implementing various measures for avoiding and minimizing the effects of the project of potentially occurring federally threatened and endangered species, including but not limited to zero wetland impacts, and other than the 240-foot section of overhead tie line, which will be marked, no new transmission lines are being constructed.
Okay. And would you please also briefly summarize any other anticipated impacts and how these effects will be mitigated?
Yes, most of the impacts from Table 17, Section 7, page 737, have been discussed already, with the exception of visual. And visual impacts will occur. The impacts are based on a subjective human response, and there are also existing wind energy facilities in the project vicinity. And as I mentioned, Wilton 4 will work with landowners to site the turbines. And they will also not be located in sensitive and environmentally sensitive areas. And the other one is vegetation. And Wilton 4 will avoid existing trees and shrubs as practicable. And if impacts cannot be avoided, the individual trees or shrubs will be replaced. Temporarily disturbed areas will be reseeded per U.S. Fish and Wildlife and NRCS recommendations.
In addition to the mitigation measures you've already discussed, what other mitigation measures has Wilton 4 committed to for this project?
There are 3 additional. One of them is developing a management plan to protect the spread of noxious weeds throughout the project area and adjacent areas. Restricting construction and or operation activities due to active raptor nests, mapping and flagging raptor nests found during construction, and placing turbines as far away from raptor nest as project engineering constraint permits, and then the reseeding and planting disturbed areas with native materials.
And to your knowledge, have any state or federal agencies objected to this wind farm project?
No.
And in your opinion, if the wind farm is constructed as set forth in the application and discussed at this hearing, will there be any significant long-term irreversible effects to the environment or cultural resources?
No.
Your Honor, this concludes our testimony. Ms. Dubuque?
Mr. Grumman.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think Ms. Dubuque answered most of my questions, so I should be fairly short. With the involvement of WAPA, there's going to be a federal impact statement involved with this matter. Is that correct?
Yes.
If you could please expand upon that for the record. Kind of march us through how that's going to be involved.
As I mentioned, the public scoping meeting was held back in July, and that, you know, kind of kicks off the process. Right now, the draft environmental impact statement is underway. As you know, the NEPA process it follows a pretty similar process to, you know, your state process, where they identify all the environmental impacts and come up with a proposed action. The draft EIS will probably, I think the schedule to go out to the public comment period is probably within the next month or so. The record of decision is we're hoping for July of 2012. As part of that process, as I mentioned, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will be consulted as Section 7 consultation, and SHPO will also be consulted under the Section 106 consultation. So that process is already underway as well.
Thank you. And this question may be to Mr. Biello as well. Mr. Lean had asked about the closest non-participating resident. Would Ms. Dubuque answer that question, or are you expecting another witness to address that? Or
I think we'll have to do a late file exhibit.
Okay.
Okay. Now is the time to do that. So, Mr. Grumman or Mr. Lean, what is the information sought, and what is the exhibit to be titled?
What's my understanding, Mr. Lean can correct me, is there is a map, and what our question is what is the closest non-participating resident to one of the turbines, or maybe even just an affected area, Jerry?
What's the closest to a turbine?
To a turbine.
Yeah, and who is that, or what resident's location is that?
Is that, do you anticipate that it would be in the form of a map or simply a statement, or what, Mr. Lean?
I'm fine with a statement. If they can refer to the map to the location, I think we're going to get the map as an exhibit, too. Is that right?
No.
No.
It's sitting over there, right?
It's not anticipated to be an exhibit at this time, no.
Maybe we should.
Isn't it part of the application? Yes. It's part of the application.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Am I mistaken? I just assume that.
I was looking for it before the project layout map with a...
I believe that was a part of the addendum.
As long as we have it somewhere.
Is it part of the supplement to the
application? I believe so. I think I don't. I just don't have it separately, but I think there should be. Is there a cover letter to that? To the page, it should have been included, and if not, we can send it. But
we do, Your Honor, have one of each here. If you would prefer, we enter that into the record.
The question is, what does the commission want? Do you want a map? Do you want a statement? Do you want both?
If we don't have the map in the record already, the map. Along with an indication of which one is the closest non-participating. In this addendum that was filed, I see there are two maps that are the same here. I wonder if one of them was supposed to be the map we're talking about.
No, that was there's a topo and an aerial, so those are correct. But
okay.
Yeah, if not, we'll submit it as a late filed.
What will we submit as a late filed?
Your Honor, we would propose to submit a map with the detail that Mr. Lean has requested. If that is sufficient.
Okay. For the record, Exhibit 3. Will be a late filed exhibit showing and identifying the closest non-participating landowner to a wind turbine location.
And I was thinking actually it would show all of the distances from residences to all of the turbines.
Mr. Biella, is that so? Then Exhibit 3 will be a map showing the distances to all, the distances from wind turbines to all residences.
Well, Judge, I think the qualifier is categorized by participating and non-participating status, isn't that?
Is that where we are? But they're still showing all turbines, but identified both as to participating and non-participating.
Yes, Your Honor, no problem.
All right, Exhibit 3. Mr. Biela, that's acceptable?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman?
No objection.
Exhibit 3 is a map showing the location of residences to wind turbines in the project. The residents identified as participating or non-participating with the distances stated. All right. Exhibit 3, a late filed exhibit, is received.
I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Leon.
Tracy, you said 48 point some decibels was the limit from the EPA. Is that something new? Or, I mean, we used different numbers before.
No, we've always used 48.6, and that's the hold on, let me just grab the guidelines here. I don't want to misquote myself. So the 48.6 dBA is the maximum instantaneous LEQ, and maybe you're thinking of the 55 dBA, which is the LDN, which is outdoors at all residential receptors, so they kind of correlate to the two things. And I believe one is indoors and one is outdoors. So
the ones in the shadow study here that we have, those are outdoors, right?
Well, shadow would be... Yeah. These are they're calculated to meet the 48.6 or not value. So that's why in the tables you'll see the exceedances are highlighted above 48.6.
Okay. If we were looking at 45 instead of 48.6, I see there's quite a few of them in there that are above that level. So is this at the corner, at the closest part of the house on the outside to the turbine? Or it said for Croft Township we're looking at 100 feet from the turbine.
We did also run the analysis for that specific requirement for Croft Township, and we met all of those values as well. Yeah, because we had to actually rerun that after we got that ordinance. So using the Croft Township criteria, noise levels within 100 feet of all non-participating receptors are in compliance.
Looking at the noise study, a lot of the receptors were vacant. Does that mean that they're for rent or something? Or, I mean, is this just are they abandoned? Or I suppose that varied. And my question, I guess, really is, are these participating landowners or non-participating in the ones that are higher? I know it's hard to answer that clearly, but are there non-participating landowners in this?
There are no non-participating landowners that exceed those thresholds.
Which thresholds?
The 48.6.
How about 45?
I would have to go through. I'm not sure where the 45...
I wonder if we could amend our late file exhibit we just had, and then to specify on those non-participating exhibits a receptor ID number for the noise study so that we can look at the tables and see what it says. So we see if, so we can tell who the non-participating landowners are and what their, what kind of noise levels are.
Above 45 or just in general?
Above 45, but if it's possible to put everybody's receptor ID number on that, then we'd know where they're at. Unless we already, wait a minute, we already have that, don't we?
There is a table that summarizes everything, and it mentions whether or not the property is abandoned or occupied.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. I guess what I'm trying to find out is how many of these, in the past we've used the 45 dBA, and if we've got receptors that aren't, that are occupied by non-participating people getting above 45 dB, we should know what they are. I would like to know who they are.
Okay.
So I take it, Mr. Biela, this constitutes an amendment of Exhibit 3. Here's what we're going to do. We'll have a conference immediately following the hearing,
okay,
and with counsel and Mr. Lean, and let's figure out what this exhibit is going to contain and how it will be described.
Okay.
All right. So yes, the exhibit will stand as received, but subject to further definition, which I will make part of the exhibit list. Let's do it that way.
Okay.
So we can move on.
Okay.
Mr. Lean, anything further?
I don't think so. That's
questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
I don't know if this is helpful or not in your discussions that you'll be having after the hearing, but I think some of the maps that we've seen lately in some other applications that we have had that I found to be useful and might be useful in this instance as well, might require a series of maps as opposed to trying to combine it all on one, but I believe in some of our other apps recently we've had maps that would have, say, the acoustic layout, and I think you've got those in here. But the receptor points are actually color-coded so that you know if it's a participating landowner or a non-participating landowner, and then there's a table associated with it which delineates that as well. And then you'd have a separate map that details shadow flicker, and we've got those maps in here as well. But the actual individual receptors can be color-coded whether to indicate whether they're participating or non-participating. That would be helpful.
Are you referring to the Meadowlark hearing?
Oh, gosh, I don't know which ones. Oh, it seems like we've had a couple that have that sort of information in them. So I don't know if the particular maps and modeling that they do allows for that feature or not, but something similar to that on a map is ideal because you can just look at it. A table would, I suppose, be helpful too and would need to be associated with it anyway. So whether that's helpful or not, I think a lot of the questions that I had were similar to what Jerry was having, just so I can get a sense for participating versus non-participating landowner and what the acoustic and shadow flicker impacts are. I'd say I don't know if we've ever said 45 is the limit. I think in recent applications, it seems like for non-participating landowners, it's tended to be in the lower 40s. Again, I don't know that there was ever there's not a rule that talks about it and or necessarily even a rule of thumb. I think that's just kind of been what we've been noticing as a trend, and it might cause the commission more concern if we get into the upper 40s for non-participating landowners. So that would be helpful information for me. Tracy, if you could talk a little bit about how having a NEPA impacts U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service input into this. I noticed from the correspondence that I found in the application that it seems like we have a lot less information in this one from them because of the NEPA process, and it's almost like they're deferring that to Western. Maybe if you could talk a little bit about how having a NEPA impacts some of these other federal agencies.
Yeah, I guess my guess there would be that, or my thoughts there would be that I think they know that they have to go through the Section 7 consultation, so they have a little bit more, you know, to say in that matter, where it's a little bit, you know, they have a little bit more jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. Whereas as part of this process, maybe, you know, we contact them. We incorporate as many of the their concerns. But for the federal process, until Western gets kind of, quote-unquote, I'm not thinking of the name right now, but buy-off from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and approval, then they won't issue the record of decision.
Sure. So fair to say they reserve their input for that federal process as opposed to providing a lot for this particular proceeding.
Right.
Okay. And then I think you ran through this earlier, but I just wanted to circle back to it. The status with regard to SHPO recommendations and when all of that will be done again?
It's a similar process. See, for us, normally, if there's no federal nexus, then we would submit the reports to SHPO and receive concurrence. In this process, we have to go through Western. So we submit our reports to Western, who then in turn has their archaeologists review, and then we'll pass off the results to SHPO. So it's a little bit of a longer process. That said, the cultural report is already to Western, so I would imagine that they should be submitting the report to SHPO. SHPO is already aware. We've been in consultation with them throughout the whole process. Those folks over there seem very, you know, they know that we've gone through everything. We've done the class one, class three, you know, we're doing the class two come spring. So, and we've been, you know, talking through them throughout the process. So I would imagine a very fast concurrence letter received.
Okay. Brian, I don't know if you have any. I may look through. I may have made a few notes. And
yeah, I have.
Okay. That you, I'll circle back if I have any more.
Sure.
Thank you, Tracy, for your testimony. I actually, similar to Commissioner Clark's questions about how the integration between what we normally would do, if you will, without an EIS, Habitat Conservation Plan, if a company doesn't do a full-blown NEPA, they participate in the Habitat Conservation Plan typically. How does that roll into what the EIS may require? Just to see how those two might mesh together.
Habitat Conservation Plan is actually separate from this process. Where, as part of Wilton 4, there's not a Habitat Conservation Plan. That's kind of a whole total separate issue. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, there is a process right now going through a Habitat Conservation Plan for whooping cranes, and I know that a lot of wind developers in the area are part of that process. But this is a kind of a separate process from the Habitat Conservation Plan draft environmental impact statement that's kind of underway right now. So as part of this process, we'll be doing the avian and bat protection plan and also a avoidance and minimization plan. So those are additional steps that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service does like to see as part of that process to the adaptive management plan specifically goes into some detail about what to do in the event of this. So say a large fatality, issue, or, if a whooping crane is seen, it kind of breaks down what the steps are. So it kind of helps, some of the folks in the field, to determine what the steps would be, So it's just kind of a next level of what the process would be.
So just by a company getting a record of decision that says it's fine to go forward doesn't mean their risk is reduced from the Habitat Conservation Plan.
Absolutely not, no.
So the Fish and Wildlife Service, and I know you can't speak for them, but theoretically they could say they could not disagree to the NEPA but still not have a viable habitat conservation plan with the company.
Right.
Okay, fair enough. And then the just something you said kind of struck me, and I just wanted to ask you about it. You talked about cumulative effect for wind is a positive on air quality. How did you get to that statement?
Well, because when you reference it to other different types of energy production, so coal power plants.
Okay.
As opposed to wind.
And that would make sense if the capacity factor of wind was 100%. But the capacity factor even in this good wind is only 48%. So that was it's not 100%. It's not base load power. So my difference in that, how you would get to that.
It's just part of the process that wind is a clean energy source.
Okay, fair enough. And then during the scoping meeting of July, did you get a look at all those comments?
Yes.
Is that something that is in the record that we could look at the comments from that scoping meeting?
Yes, that's all part of the process, and it will be in the draft EIS.
But is it in our record that you submitted anywhere?
No.
Could we get a copy of that? I'd like to have that just to see what...
I believe we would have to wait until the process, until Western... again, it's not necessarily coming from Tetra Tech. It would be coming from Western. So we can, everybody is entitled to a copy of the draft environmental impact statement. So once that is released, we could get a copy. But Western has a process that they're going through. So and all the comments that are part of that process are currently being addressed, which is the process. So.
So are you listed as a participating agent in this EIS? You must be.
Participating agent? No, I mean, we're doing, we're working to do the resource surveys. So we're compiling the information that will be part of the draft environmental impact statement.
So you haven't seen yet all the comments from that scoping meeting?
Well, I have, because I was there. And I was, yeah.
Is there anything that you've seen in the comments from that scoping meeting that you feel are not being addressed in what your application covers today?
No. I mean, there are some comments that you can't necessarily address, and you can probably imagine what those might be. there are some landowners that may not be happy with the project. But other than that, everything has been addressed. There was some foul language used.
Sure. So I guess for us then, that's something we can go through in a work session because typically our orders, if approved, would be contingent upon a final EIS being approved and all that. So, okay, thank you. That was all that I had.
So, Commissioners, there's no request for...
No, I would take that, withdraw right. that.
Just, that's fine.
I'll look at that.
Commissioner Clark.
Sure. I wanted to follow up on something Jerry was asking about because I had a similar question. In the... looking at the shadow flicker analysis, and this is somewhat similar to, I think, some of the classifications in the acoustic study. Yeah, I'm on page 5, table 1B. There are different descriptions used of the types of buildings that are there. Unoccupied versus house vacant. I think I understand what a barn is. Or the difference between non-residential and a barn. What sort of delineates some of these different categories of occupied, unoccupied, non-residential, barn, house vacant?
That information is actually pulled from a farmstead report. And I'm sure we can, pull that together. I honestly don't know off the top of my head if there's any, little tweaking thing that might be different between them. But, that's something that we can pull together.
Okay.
I just don't want to answer for
sure.
them.
Sure. Yeah, that would be helpful if that could be provided.
Again.
again. Is this a request for a late filed exhibit?
Sure.
The exhibit will be described as? Ms. Dubuque?
Maybe farmstead report reception descriptions.
Yeah, sure. Description of terms used in. And the Flickr analysis. Looking quickly at the acoustic results, the description of the receptor status there is a little bit more straightforward. It's just either vacant or occupied.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Exhibit 4, Commissioner Clark, is to be described as a farmstead report receptor descriptions and definition of terms used.
I think that's close enough if everyone understands what I'm getting at.
All right. Exhibit 4 is a legend. Exhibit to be filed by Wilton Wind and Mr. Biela.
Yes, Your Honor.
Any objection?
No.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Exhibit 4 is received as a late filed exhibit. Further questions from the commission?
I just wanted to reconfirm, and I think this Mr. Biela asked this, but just confirming, for both the shadow flicker and the acoustic studies, it includes the entire cumulative effect of all of the wind turbines in the area, correct?
Correct.
Not just Wilton 4. Okay.
Correct. Well, there's both scenarios presented, one just right. for Wilton 4, right?
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Biela?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Lane? Thank you very much, Ms. Dubuque.
Thank you.
Your
Mr.
Honor,
Biela, anything further?
Nothing further, Your Honor. That concludes our testimony.
Mr. Grumman, anything for the record?
No, Your Honor.
All right.
I did have one question. I didn't know if this was going to be followed up on, and maybe it was, and I missed it. The question regarding turbine setbacks being from the right-of-way versus center line of the road, was that? Okay.
We would like to recall Mr. Scoville for the
answer. Mr. Scoville. Mr. Scoville, you understand, of course, that your testimony continues under oath and subject to penalties of perjury.
Yes, Your Honor.
Commissioner Clark.
Scott, if you'd like to answer the question regarding whether the right-of-ways or whether the 1.1 times the turbine height to the blade tip setback is from the center line of the road or the edge of the right-of-way?
For unimproved section lines, we set back 1.1. For unimproved roads or unimproved section lines, we submit 1.1 from the center line. For improved roads, it's 1.1 from the edge of the right-of-way.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
I had to verify I was under oath.
Any further questions from the commission? Mr. Biela.
None, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Lane.
No, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Scoville.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
No problem. All right. For the record, I assume there is no one present who wishes to offer any further evidence to the commission. There being none, closing comments from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
Just thank you for a good hearing, and look forward to taking all the information, getting late-filed exhibits, and being able to render a decision sometime soon. Thanks.
Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you. Very well done.
Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, and this is an interesting hearing. This is the first time I'd heard the differences between how a habitat conservation plan lays out with the EIS process. So very good. Thank you for your work today, and look forward to our work session on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners. Mr. Biela, anything further for the record?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman, anything further for the record?
No, Your Honor.
Accordingly, the hearing of the application of Wilton Wind 4
LLC for its application for a certificate of site compatibility to authorize construction of a wind energy project. North Dakota Public Service Commission case number PU-11-646 is closed.
Thank you.
Council, let's, Mr. Leon, let's work out a description for Exhibit 3. I've just got, I'd break this down into a run-on sentence. I describe Exhibit 3 as a map or maps showing, one, location of wind turbines and closest residences or all residences?
Residence distances labeled from to the closest turbines.
Right.
Residences.
Okay, but where do you draw the line on residents that you're going to identify? Because you're going to include residents outside the project area. Do I understand that?
All within the project area and any adjacent to the project area.
Yeah, I know. Come on, Jerry. Give me some help here.
What do you guys want to do? Occupied residences within a mile.
Okay, and occupied residences within a mile. That works for me. All right, and then two, then I do a semicolon, distance from turbine to closest residence, closest occupied residence. Jerry? But that's what you're seeking.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
Indicating closest.
Well, distance showing. Remember, I've got my predicating statement, map or map showing. Two, distance from turbine to closest residence.
Okay,
semicolon three, whether residence is participating or non-participating landowner. Semicolon, four, receptor ID number for each location. Now, that doesn't make any sense to me. Does that make sense? Is that what you want?
Each residence, you could say, resident location.
Oh, for each residence. Receptor ID number for each residence. Now, does receptor ID number, does that cover both sound and shadow?
Receptors?
Probably not.
Yes.
Okay, so then you've got receptor ID number for each residence. Now that's the end of my list. Does that cover what the commission is requesting? And Mr. Biela, is that information that Wilton Wind can supply, is willing to supply?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's the way I'll do my exhibit list. I understand that's a long description, but who cares? That's what you're looking for. That's what it says. That'll be on the exhibit list. You know my custom is to send out the exhibit list before I file it to give everybody a chance to say, no, you know, that's not right or whatever. And I'm perfectly willing to fix it up post hoc as long as, you know, everybody agrees. So if you want to change something in the exhibit list, you know, send me an email. Let me know copy to the other party, and then assuming we can quickly come to an agreement with an email, and we always have in the past when there's been any problem, I'll just revise it and then I'll file my exhibit list. If I do a revised exhibit list, I'll send you another copy again, so you'll know where we are before that winds up in the docket. Okay, anything further, Mr. Lean? Is this, we got the commission comfortable? Wonderful. Mr. Beal, anything further?
Nothing further,
Your Honor. Mr. Grumman, I kind of left you out of this, but.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll be submitting proposed findings.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman, we got a little time for the lunch hour. Have you got a little time for me regarding another matter?
Most definitely.
Okay, I'll be down to your office in a minute here.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
And that's the flip side, too. We can just talk about it tomorrow.